It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility.
You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Fry gun.
The Medium Fun.
And welcome to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan here in the great state of New Hampshire. Matt joins us from down in San Antonio, Texas. Spurs are coming in to TD Garden this week on Sunday, the only appearance of the year, late in the year this time around for the Spurs against the Celtics. Matt will not be playing this time around, though, boys and girls. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. It doesn't mean as much, Matt, just because you're not there. It's just not the same. Maybe Mano, Tim, and Tony have something to do with it, but mostly you. But we'll make it through it. We'll enjoy the game. But Celtics Spurs doesn't have that same type of feel that it used to have.
I agree. You know, I think also, like, during those years, the Celtics were, you know, right at the top of the standings in the East, and we were always right at the top of the standings in the West. So it was kind of like a clash of the Titans in that regard as well. So it was like a measuring stick for each team. So, and also, I think once Kevin Garnett left the Celtics, watching him and Timmy go at it was pretty fun.
Yeah, both fierce competitors, both have as different personalities as possible outwardly. So that was always interesting, where Garnett was always, you know, talking and in extremely intense visually, and Tim Duncan was just kind of a quiet assassin, but had that same fire that burned inside of him that that Kevin Garnett did. And, you know, it's interesting. We've heard Garnett talk a lot, obviously, with his Area 21. And, you know, if you play NBA 2K19 or 18, you know, he is in there and he talks a lot about his matchups with Tim Duncan. And, that's one of those special matchups from that time period. And, that's certainly missed. Anyway, we'll transition into the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament. What are your feelings on the brackets, on the number one seeds coming in? You know, we talked a lot this year about Duke and where Duke was at, but I think that obviously, you know, Zion Williamson back, but Duke fell off a little bit. They still got that number one seed. It was kind of, you know, Duke and everybody else for a while there. What are your feelings about the number one seeds in the brackets overall?
Yeah, I still think, with a healthy Zion, Duke's favorite. I mean, even if they just play their starters 40 minutes each, which looks like that might be Coach K's strategy, they're the team to beat. They have arguably three of the top five picks in the NBA draft in their starting lineup. And you know, they're young, but usually by the time the NCAA tournament comes along, they're not really freshmen anymore. They've had enough experience where their game has developed such that it's not like in the fall when they're coming right out of high school. So I think Duke's the team to beat. I am a little trigger shy with Virginia after last year.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, they got knocked out kind of early in the ACC tournament. So I realize they had an amazing regular season, but they did last year as well. So, they better do well in the NCAA tournament this year, or they might never escape that stigma.
No, I think you're right, and that's a team that has to have success, you know, this year. Looking at potential upsets through the first round and teams that, you know, may surprise. Vermont is a team that's won many, many years ago against Syracuse. Remember that well. They're playing Florida State. That's in Hartford. Murray State against Marquette. And you have some of the other mid-major schools like Old Dominion that are frequently competitive. So there's some potential upsets out there. But do you feel, though, that the difference between the top seeds, the really good programs, and the mid-major programs? Do you feel that that is greater than it has been in the past, or is there less of a distance between teams that we've seen in the past?
I think there's less of a difference. I think this could be the year of the mid-majors. I just feel like, especially those middle-tier Power 5 conference teams that, you know, are seeded 5 to 10 in the NCAA tournament at large berths, I don't think they're that good. That's just my opinion. Like, I think they're, I think maybe, yeah, a couple of them could make a run, potentially, but overall, I think really good mid-major teams are better than middle-of-the-pack Power 5 conference teams this time around.
I think you are 100% right. And, you know, I look at this tournament field as compared to years past, and Virginia is really, really good. But as you referenced, they have that stigma. Gonzaga is really, really good. Duke is really, really good. North Carolina, I think they're a good team. Same thing with Kentucky. Michigan, I think, has the potential to be a really good team. Tennessee, Michigan State. But, you know,
I think Tennessee could be a sleeper. Those guys rebound, they play hard, they shoot threes. I don't know how much people got to see Tennessee play this year, because when you think of the SEC, all right, you think about is Kentucky. And Kentucky's really good, as usual. But Tennessee's got seniors, they have experience. That's a team that I think could make a run.
But then you look at, and again, Texas Tech, Houston is a three, Purdue is a three, LSU. I mean, those teams from, say, you know, 3 to 6, I just don't think that they are the quality that they used to be. And even amongst the number ones and the number twos, it feels like, and again, I don't know why, nothing has really changed in regards to individuals being selected for the draft to this point. And there hasn't been a complexion change there, but it doesn't feel like that the teams are as good, and there's the depth of that, the top 25 teams, so to speak, that there used to be. Top heavy teams, maybe it's because the talent is consolidating with them. I think that's true, but I don't look at these other teams and feel like there is, you know, an overwhelming amount of talent from the 3 to the 6 or 8 seeds.
I agree. I also, you know, I'm a fan of these mid-major schools that recruit kids that fit into their program or maybe got overlooked by some of the bigger schools, and then they use player development to develop them so that by the time they're juniors and seniors, they know how to play, they know how to work the offensive system, they're talented, they're more mature. Those are the teams, I think, that have the potential to upset some of the more talented Power 5 teams that maybe don't play the game the right way, if that makes sense. It is a team sport, and you can overcome that talent gap by how you execute and play together.
In Boston last year, Villanova obviously won the East region, went on to win the championship, and pretty much, you know, the entire team left. They were just left with two contributors in Booth and Pascal. Or Pascal, and they are number 6 in the East, and that to me says, or excuse me, the South, that says a lot too. Where, you know, they won the Big East, and they're a 6th seed, and there's not a lot left there. They have some players they've brought in, and some guys didn't play on the last championship team. Jay Wright's a great coach, but to me, that kind of speaks to exactly what we're talking about. That Villanova is a 6. I mean, if I were predicting where Villanova was going to finish this year, it would be kind of scratching or clawing their way into the tournament, and there they are as a number 6 seed.
Yeah, and I mean, Jay Wright has a great program. So, I mean, he's a guy who, even with a bunch of new faces, is going to do a good job coaching them and getting them to play the right way and buy in. But I think there's a lot of mid-major schools where it's like a coaching carousel. And they haven't really established that program, that culture, year in and year out, because there's new coaches every 2 or 3, 4 years, whatever, because they don't win or the school administration is unsatisfied, so they keep switching them out. And if you can't establish that culture, it becomes, all right, we need to recruit talent, and they recruit the talent, but they never get them to gel. It seems like it's like, yeah, maybe these teams are talented, maybe they could make a run, but also maybe they could lose in the first round. It's kind of a crapshoot.
Yeah, this is the Life in That Bonner presented by Concord Orthopedics. I'm Chris Ryan. In the middle and the latter segment of the program, we're going to go all in on the Boston Red Sox. Red Sox President of Baseball Operations Dave Dombrowski, the architect of the 2018 and 19 Red Sox, will join us, and also Pedro Martinez and Dwight Evans on the program today, as was in Florida at spring training for the last week.
I have a Dwight Evans glove.
Do you really? He is an awesome dude.
I bought it on eBay 2 years ago, a Dwight Evans first baseman glove.
Is it like a game used one?
My son wanted to play catch with me, so I didn't have a baseball glove. Yeah. So I went on eBay. I wanted a first baseman's glove. I figured I could get a better deal buying one used. Like, I'm not playing professionally. And a Dwight Evans one came up first. I'm like, oh, it's a sign.
You got it. It was meant to happen.
Buy it now. Yep.
So I'm assuming it's not a game used glove. It is a Dwight Evans model glove.
Might have been. Might have been
game used. Who knows?
It's black. It turns my hand black every time I use it, though.
Yeah, that's not good. So who was your guy? Who was your Red Sox guy growing up? Was it Dwight Evans?
Yeah, I love Dwight Evans, Wade Boggs, Jim Rice, Mike Greenwell, Roger Clemens, obviously.
Yeah.
But that was kind of my heyday.
That I have heard from quite a few people after the Dwight Evans interview that I did that about how much they loved Dwight Evans. And he's a guy
that
kind of...
It was his nickname.
Dewey.
But people love a good nickname. It gives you bonus points.
See, we were talking with Reggie Jackson and some of the other guys in spring training about the lack of stars in baseball. And I think that's a big part of it, is that there were, cool names that kind of, caught people's attention. And, Mookie is a cool name that catches people's attention. And that may have something to do with his stardom outside of the fact that he's one of the best players in baseball. But there was Mickey and the Babe. And, having cool nicknames, I think, is a big part of it. Like, the NBA guys all have kind of their own names. And that's a big part. You got to have a name that kind of catches on and that's unique. And there's obviously multiple other aspects of marketing that are much more in depth than this, but having a cool nickname is a huge part of catching on with folks.
Yeah, I'm a walking testament of that.
That is true.
Like, people love yelling my nicknames at me. I can be walking with way better players than me, but they're all going to be yelling at me because they love my nickname. It's weird.
Yeah, it's true. Well, Matt, as always, good to talk with you. Catch up again next week. Talk some more NCAA tournament.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right, this is the Life of Matt Bonner presented by Concord Orthopedics. Steve Dombrowski, the president of baseball operations for the Boston Red Sox, is up next as we sit down in his office at JetBlue Park for a conversation about the Red Sox and
baseball.
Welcome
back. This is the Life of Matt Bonner presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. This segment of the show brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. If you've been injured, the most important decision you're going to make is who your lawyer is going to be. I encourage you to check out Douglas Leonard and Garvey at nhlawoffice.com. I always deeply enjoy the conversations with the Red Sox president of baseball operations, Dave Dombrowski, and this was no different from inside his office at JetBlue Park, a conversation with the president of baseball operations and architect of the Boston Red Sox, Dave Dombrowski.
Joined by the Red Sox president of baseball operations, Dave Dombrowski, here at spring training. Again, a lot of excitement for the season. We've been talking about it with the ball players. And for you personally, how do you evaluate this club coming off of the World Series championship? Obviously, a lot of the same parts back again. What do you see in your ball club, and how do you predict kind of the future with this group, given the talent level you have?
Well, we have a good club. I think that's apparent to people that watched us last year, and we basically have the same guys back this season, except for a couple. And we look for some growth with a couple of our young players and a couple of players that we acquired last year we have for the full season. So we really like the team. Never take anything for granted by any means. But we're in a position that we think we have the type of talent that has a chance to go out there and win. You have to go out there and perform. You can't make any predictions. But we really like the overall ball club.
How do you go about embracing the championship, but also in some ways moving on from it? And we talked with Brock Holt about this. And the challenge that exists in the season, obviously, is kind of having the X on your back, so to speak. But also there's the opportunity that exists to be, you know, an all-time team, given the challenges that exist with repeating. Is that something that you feel the group needs to embrace, or is it, you know, you do turn the page and move to a different chapter?
Well, I think you embrace trying to be a champion again. It's very difficult to do. I think it's a great challenge. Our club, led by Alex Cora and the staff, are in a position with our players that they are a very focused group.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that there's any type of motivation that's lacking. I also don't think they're a club that's going to take things for granted. Again, you need to have breaks go your way if you're going to win. Alex, to me, captured it perfectly in his opening speech, because I've always been turn the page. I think that's important. A lot of people I've heard use that terminology. But Alex made the point of, normally when you turn the page, it's of a negative connotation.
Right.
But in this case, rather than turn the page, you learn from what you experienced last year, you gather it, you move on, and you start a new chapter. And I think that's really a good way to go about it, that with this group of players that we have and the whole organization, we've started a new chapter, and hopefully that new chapter ends up in the same place that we ended last year.
Why, in your view, is it so difficult to repeat in baseball? I mean, we've seen great teams. Obviously, the Giants did the every other year, the even year thing for, you know, a period of six seasons there. We've seen Red Sox championship teams that were great. Why do you think it's so difficult to win back-to-back seasons? Is it the workload? Is it the pressure? How do you look at it?
I think there's really a number of reasons. I don't think when you have something like that that you can identify one specific situation. But I think that there are a few. One is it's difficult to win, period.
Mm-hmm.
So to win, the odds are against you. There are some really good clubs. Look at Houston the year before, mm-hmm. outstanding club. A lot of people thought they would win last year, and they ended up running to a good club in our regard. So it's very difficult to win. Secondly, you have extra workload for another month on mm-hmm. your club into the month of late October. So that ends up taking its toll. Then I think you also deal with today's rules in the game, just the free agency aspect of the game. You really don't have a chance to bring your whole club back mm-hmm. very often. So the rules themselves make it very difficult. So when you look at that combination of factors, and they're all important reasons, you can see why it's very difficult to repeat.
And you're going to have that challenge in regards to keeping the club together after this season with a number of free agents. How are you going to move forward in regards to that? Obviously, each situation is different, but do you use this time period to try to put that in, you know, in its context and move forward, or do you feel that that's something that's best done during the season or perhaps after?
Well, that's a great question, and I think from our perspective, there's a lot of players that are free agents at the end of this year and then year after that, very important players with our club, and we realize we're not going to be able to keep all of our players. The rules are just not going to allow that. So you can be assured there are many of these guys that we want to keep with us. I've always felt that contract negotiations are best kept to yourself, but I also think that normally it's the case that once the season begins, you normally put those aside, because the one thing you don't want to have are distractions,
mm-hmm.
and contract negotiations can be distractions. I'm not saying that you never do it, but once in a while something comes up and there's a particular reason why you do something. But generally, most of those negotiations would take place before the season begins, and then I think you would be in a spot where you would pick those up at the end of the year once again. Again, unlikely, but could happen that once in a while something does take place during the season.
There were rumors in the offseason about, you know, various players and potentially being traded. And, you know, when I thought about it, the challenge that you have is that if you're going to trade these players of value, you're going to want to bring back players of value as well. And if you're going to bring back players of value, you're going to have to pay them at some point down the line as well. So what is the challenge in your view in having all these players coming, all these high quality World Series champion players coming into free agency, and the bind that you're in, so to speak? Because if you are going to trade them, you're going to want to acquire someone of equal talent, or a group of individuals of equal talent that are going to have to be compensated at some point in the near future as well.
Well, again, I think that you have to really look and focus on what your priorities are. And right now, our priority is to try to win mm-hmm. again this year. So that sort of takes precedence over everything else. Now, if you're in a position where you're not independent race come the middle of the season trading deadline, perhaps you tackle some things. I don't think we'll be in that spot, and I'm hoping we're not in that spot. Mm-hmm. But then after that, I think you just, you know, there's a lot of different thoughts that go through your mind. There's different ideas that we have. Those are things that you end up tackling at the end of the year and going into the next couple of years. I think you combine looking at your own players. You'll get some of the young players coming up from your system, guys that you think can have an impact on your team and help you win as quickly as possible. You look at other clubs, free agents, and who you might be able to trade for and acquire. So there's just a lot that goes into that, and it's something that, I mean, not that we haven't already thought about it, not that you already look at it in a tentative fashion, but really our focus this year is to try to win a world championship again.
Yeah, and final thing on this, I mean, do you prioritize the individuals that are coming up for contract, the Porcellos, Sales, Bogarts, or you have obviously the other individuals like Mookie and Andrew Benintendi that you want to lock up as well. Do you take individuals based upon precedent in terms of their skill set or based upon, you know, the deadline that is coming about? And I assume you've already made those types of evaluations, or is it an ongoing process?
Well, I really wouldn't get into how we prioritize those, but we do have our own priorities internally and on guys, because again, if you can't sign everybody, you have to usually you tackle it in a priority fashion, but we have our thought process. There's a lot of different things that go into it, and we factor all that in.
Your in-season acquisitions were phenomenal, and you focused on those, it would appear, based upon the fact you did not wait till the trade deadline to acquire Eovaldi and Pierce and Kinsler, and each played a key role, particularly in regards to, obviously, on the field, but also who they were as individuals. What do you look for when you're trying to acquire players in season, particularly given that it's not like a free agent process where you sit down like we are and talk to the person and get a gauge for who they are as an individual and so forth, and you're kind of not as privy to who they might be as people. So how do you go about trying to make sure the individuals are not just the right fit, but have that makeup where they are going to have success and meet the challenges, particularly like Pierce and Eovaldi did?
First of all, you set your priority and what you are looking to fill as far as your needs are concerned, of course. So last year you identify in our situation our needs were right-handed bats and maybe another starter, starting pitcher. But it was a situation where we prioritized that. And then we're in a position where you do your homework as much as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. It's amazing when you're in a spot like we are where you've been in the game for a long time, your scouts are out there, you have people in your front office that have been out there a long time. So you're able to get a lot of information about individuals. And I think for us, there's a couple of factors come into play that you want to be in a spot where, first and foremost, they can handle a pennant race when you're trying to acquire somebody like that, because there's a different pressure attached to a pennant race. And then also to be able to handle the market, the market of Boston, which is different. So that combination of factors, you do a lot of homework. And it's surprising if you rarely make a trade where you're just snapping your fingers and it happens. You're doing some homework and background checking in the meantime, and hopefully you make as wise a decision as you possibly can.
Finally, on rule changes, and for people who love baseball like we do, it's kind of difficult to obviously embrace some of the changes that are being pushed forth and that the commissioner has mentioned in regards to the Atlantic League and that they're going to implement this year. What are your feelings? Obviously, you adapt to whatever is taking place, but do you feel that there's a necessity for these types of rule changes that are being described, which are pretty big rule changes? Obviously, things that were done in the past in regards to the mound and the height of the mound after the dominant era in the 60s for pitchers, so there's not completely out of the norm, but do you feel that these vast amount of changes are necessary and appropriate?
Well, first of all, I don't think that they're necessarily making changes. They're just looking at different things. So I don't think it ever hurts to keep an open mind in regards to different situations, because you never can tell what ends up helping the game in some regards. So I think to try different things is great. I've been in the game a long time and have seen a lot of different changes throughout the years. And really my philosophy has always been just what you said in the beginning, is to just adapt to whatever is out there, whatever is presented to you. When you're asked your opinions in meetings, you give them. A lot of times you're not even asked in these situations because they become at a higher level than what you are dealing. But I've had trade deadlines change, waiver rules change, roster size changes, DHs come in, different rules as far as leagues are concerned and the number of clubs transferring from league to league. So my mindset is always an open-minded one, and I'm a traditionalist, mm-hmm. yet I think you also have to be contemporary in your thought process and realize that you're also trying to keep the game appealing to a younger generation, mm-hmm. whenever that may be, and you see what happens.
Dave, it's always great to see you, and best of luck.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me.
That is Dave Dombrowski. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. In return, two Red Sox legends, Pedro Martinez and Dwight Evans. In the final segment of the program, this is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Welcome back. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. So we continue with the Red Sox at spring training, the World Series champions getting ready for the 2019 year. They begin their regular season in Seattle against the Mariners on March the 28th. For this segment of the show, we're going to talk to a couple Red Sox legends. First, one of the great pitchers of all time, Pedro Martinez, and then one of the great right fielders in Red Sox history, one of the best players of his era, and some think an individual who should be in the National Baseball Hall of Fame in Dwight Evans. First, we start with Pedro Martinez.
We'll talk to you about the 04 championship team. It's the 15th anniversary of that. What excitement do you get for, you know, thinking about that group and celebrating that accomplishment?
Well, it's always exciting to know that you're part of the 25 that finally put a number on the board for the city of Boston. I will always be proud of that, just like I'm proud of everyone after that. But for me, it's a special feeling. It's a special group. It will always be. I don't have enough words to describe how proud I am to have being part of the group that brought that trophy to Boston after 86 years waiting.
Do you ever think about the what ifs of, you know, this whole Red Sox dynasty that we've seen over the last 15 years with four championships, and, you know, the what if Dave Roberts is thrown out in that spot? And there's so many different variables, and this obviously could have gone in a different direction.
I hate to think losing.
Yeah.
I don't like thinking losing. I'm. If you put me in the same situation again, I'm gonna continue to say, what if he steals it? What if the clutch hit comes over? I'm always thinking winning. And that's probably why we won it.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Because we never quit. Yeah. We look dumb enough to not care enough, and also good enough to care too much. And I'm glad we ended up on the other side of what if we ended up winning it.
That attitude was so important with that team, because there were a whole bunch of naysayers around you who were like, this always goes wrong, or this goes wrong, the ball goes through somebody's legs.
There's a lot of negativity, and there's always been in Boston. Whenever things go wrong, you know, we are centered by a group of media that really follows their baseball, that really follow their Red Sox, and that makes it really difficult. But thank God we have a management that is committed to winning, a city that demands a lot of their athletes, but yes, support their athletes like no one else. And if you can see it, you see the Celtics, you see the Patriots, you see it's the same story with everyone. But the Red Sox are a unique group of guys that they follow. WEI, which is a radio station, follows sports 24/7. That's unheard of in any other city. So in Boston, it's so small to cover that many sports and that many athletes. It makes a perfect place for a media member to go and dig for stuff. So, you know, Boston is just like that, and negativity sells more.
No, truth. Chris Sale, what do you admire most about him? I remember a moment when they retired your number, and he came out of the White Sox clubhouse because he wanted to meet you for, I don't know if it was for the first time, but he definitely wanted to meet you that night. Do you guys have kind of a kinship, a bond?
We do, and we are so similar, except he's taller, he's better looking, and he's lefty. But everything else seems to be right there. Me and Chris Sale have a lot to share in common. I have as much respect as he has for me, even though he's younger. Because when you see guys that are, you know, so intense about their job, so responsible about their duties, about what they have to do, what they represent. Those are guys that deserve respect and admiration, and the admiration for each other is mutual.
And that fire that both of you have, to when you are on the mound, you're going to command that as your stage, and you will mow down whoever is in your way.
Yeah, Chris is no exception to the rule. He's just like that, and that's why I say that me and him are so, alike. He's intense. He wants to attack. He wants to put you away. He's not intimidated, and if anything he has to do, he will do it. And I love that. I love that passion he brings to the field. I love how he cares about his teammates. I love how he handles himself out there.
Final thing, 18 Red Sox versus 04 Red Sox, 7-game series. How does that go?
Game 7.
Game 7, you're not going to call it? You're on the mound.
Game 7. I'll be. Even if I have to face Chris Sale, I'll be.
You love Florida.
That is Pedro Martinez. Now the great number 24, Dewey Dwight Evans, a legend for the Boston Red Sox. Here's my conversation with him.
Great Dwight Evans, number 24 for the Boston Red Sox, been working with outfielders here at spring training as he does each year. And these guys have made the proclamation that they want to all win Gold Gloves this year, Benny, Mookie, and JBJ. Do you think it's possible, A, and what impresses you about each of them and their dedication to fielding?
Number one, it is possible. The way they, and I really fought for this, that, left field, center field, and right field are as different as third base, shortstop, and second base. They're three different positions. They used to give it to two center fielders and a side fielder, which I felt was wrong. So they separated. They give it to the best left, the best center, and the best right. And actually, Benintendi was a finalist in it last year. Sure, it's possible they could do that. They're really great kids. They're talented kids. They're good on the field and off the field. They're really good character. They care about each other. I can't say too much to them. Don't. I just talk to them, and they know exactly what to do, and you just try to make sure. I don't, but Goody does. Their outfield base running mm-hmm. coach just tries to, remind them of things, or not even that, just make sure they don't. And they don't. They're so good that you don't really need to do much with them. Everything you've done or we've done in the past is there. And they're fun to watch. Yeah, fun to watch.
You're regarded as arguably the best to ever play right field at Fenway Park until Mookie came along and has obviously changed the way that you field that position. He is aggressive, but he also doesn't make mistakes. He'll throw guys out, but again, he doesn't make mistakes. Talk about the way that he plays the position in right field at Fenway and how it's different, and also the challenges that exist with the small fence, the circular motion of the right field fence as well, and it's a tremendous amount of ground for him to cover.
Well, it's the most ground of any outfield, probably other than left center and center of Yankee Stadium. So it takes. You see, Mookie was really a good second baseman.
Yep.
And then we moved him to the center field, and he adjusted so well out there and played in the big leagues there. And actually, I would say about 4 years ago, we made a decision, the club did, to move him to right field and keep Jackie in center. And it's paid off, And the one thing I was just saying at the time is I don't want to see us put him in right and Jackie in center, then in the middle of the season swap him back. Let him stay out there. It's really paid off that where they're at. And Benintendi is a center fielder, but he's learned to play left field and has done and is getting better each time he goes out there. I mean, some of the plays he made in the playoffs and World Series, the one he made I thought was the most important and probably the best was the one that ended that Houston series.
Yeah.
The final out.
That was one of the best plays, ever. When you consider the time, the moment, the guys on base, the difficulty of the catch.
That was tremendous. And I'm so happy for Jackie Bradley, who has worked so hard. And, you know, I want to see these guys win, you know, handfuls of these things. And it's not about when I played or how I played or what. Mookie was trying to get at, as I said when he came up 5 years ago, I said, he's a little Willie Mays.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what he is. You're too young to know Willie Mays, and a lot of people probably are, but I thought he was the greatest player to ever play, and I think Mookie is a little Willie Mays, and a tremendous athlete. He does some things out there that are so, so good. He gets rid of the ball really quick, charges the ball, probably better than anybody in the game, and he still has that infielder mentality out there, and yet he can run, he can throw, he's great, he's fun to watch.
Do you see it as being a straight line between Mookie and Willie Mays at this point, or is Mookie, obviously he still has to do more in his career, but in terms of the skill level, the ability, he's won the MVP once, he perhaps should have won it twice. Do you see it being a parallel, or does he still have to move up more, particularly because you hear a lot of the generation of players, whether it's, you know, from the 90s, the 2000s, the 80s, the 70s, the 60s, will say, nope, my era was the best. And do you see these guys, particularly Mookie, being able to translate and go kind of across the board with the greatest of all time?
Well, Mookie's 26. That's done so much. Willie Mays played, I think, 41, 42, and it's hard to compare. His style,
right,
is what I was talking, right, about 5 years ago. His style of play, his talent. I liken him to a little Willie Mays, and time will tell. I mean, certainly on his way. I mean, he's accomplished so much, and I think he has so much more to accomplish.
How about the guys as a whole? You know, JD, his approach, the way that he swings the bat. You know, Benintendi is somehow underrated in this group. Bogey, kind of across the board. I mean, the question after last year's championship was posed to a lot of Red Sox players, former players and executives and such, about whether this was the best Red Sox team ever, and the answer was almost always in the affirmative. But there's obviously, you know, excitement in the moment and so forth. And now you take a step back, and you having played on some of the great Red Sox teams ever, I mean, do you see this group in terms of the players, the skill level, and the team as a whole, but also individually, being on par with, and as you mentioned, it's difficult to compare eras, but this group being able to compete with any era and perhaps having success?
You know, I don't look at that, and can't. Eras are different, and you know, trying to compare people with the guys that played in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, and 60s is difficult to do. These guys are outstanding. I don't think that we need to compare. I'm not saying that they might be the best ever.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question that that's a possibility. But I'm one that I can't. I look at them as individuals, and I look at how they come together as a team, mm-hmm, as a team, and teammates coming together as one. And they have that ability, and it's fun to watch, and love to see them win more championships. And we can, you know, we go back to the 27 Yankees. I mean, you know, it's pretty powerful. This, and you know, today it's tougher too, free agency, and it's tough to keep a team together. And it's, you know, I don't think the salary structures can maintain it.
Yeah.
But for right now, I'm enjoying them. In a group of 25 guys, Alex Cora has done a great job bringing these guys together, and great manager and temperament, and corralling them. And he's a respectful guy, and I think in return you get respect. So he's part of this whole thing in a big way. So he's allowing these guys to be what they are. Go ahead.
Oh, a couple more things with Dwight Evans. When you look at the way that these guys treat individuals, you know, whether it's members of the media, fans, and you know, even legends like yourself. I mean, it's to
people of a certain era and Red Sox fans, Dwight Evans means a lot. But to a kid who's like 20, you know, coming into the Red Sox, that doesn't necessarily mean the same thing. So what have been your interactions with the players, and how do you see these guys as compared to previous players? Is there a difference in the quality of the individual and how they are able to deal with people and to have success?
The one thing that I heard as a player growing up is I could never have played in their era. So I never say it to these guys. I hear guys say it that played in my era, and I don't like that.
So you don't want to be the grumpy, like,
no.
Old guy.
And you know, what you've done in the game and what you've accomplished in the game, it'll get you in the door. But it won't gain their confidence, and I'm all about gaining their confidence and respecting them for what they're doing. Mm-hmm. My time's over. You know, I played 20 years, and that's great, and it's all good, and I've coached in the big leagues, done some things, and I'm happy what I did. And it's time for me to put self, and it has been since I retired. I worked for Buddy Bell, and he said, Dewey, you and I had great careers. We both played 20 years. Our time's done. It's time for us to give to these kids and help them be better than we were. And I've adopted that, and I believe that, and that's what I'm about, is trying to make these guys and help these guys accomplish their best, to be the best, and to take it further with them, that hope that they give back to the game as well, and when their time is done, that they can also help the kids at that time and that era.
Red Sox fans, you know, certainly enjoyed the teams that you were on, and you mentioned those 20 years, and you're considered to be one of the stalwarts of Red Sox baseball. When you think back about, you know, that time period and your career, what are the things that jump out to you the most? Because most guys will talk about the relationships that they had with enjoying the process. What stands out to you the most? Is it the different situations that you worked your way through as a player, or is it the overall environment?
You know, I have to tell you that the 20 years that I played, three and a half in the minor leagues, and then 20s in the major leagues, and coached in the big leagues, went by really slow. I enjoyed the moments. I wanted to win. Had four opportunities. We got into two World Series, won seven games, and that's my biggest disappointment, that we never won that seventh game. But that's what I played for. That's what I wanted to accomplish, and that's would be my biggest disappointment. But my being with this organization and seeing them win four times since 2002 is nothing short of phenomenal. I mean, it's been fun, even though I wasn't personally involved with these players on that team, you know, just but from the outside with the organization and being part of the organization was really exceptional for me. So I've enjoyed it. And my era was completely different.
Hey, boy!
My era.
Little Brock Holt interlude.
I'm going to give you a big kiss. Ooh.
So that's Brock. I think he's going to kiss him. But, you know, my time was great. I enjoyed it. I can't go back and change things. I can't move forward.
Do you think back about certain moments? Like, players will wonder, like, are you going to wake up, you know, in the middle of the night and think about this or that or regret and so forth? I mean, is there that?
No. In certain ways, you know, you think about what you learned through the game and why couldn't I have obtained that type of temperament earlier in my career. But it's a learning process, and sometimes learning hurts. But I learned, and that's the bottom line. I learned how to be better, I guess that would be some of my regrets.
That is the great Dwight Evans, a career that looks even better in retrospect. His career OBP, .369 .272 career batting average. This has been The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment brought to you by the Prescription Center.